Thanks for joining us back on the DenverBroncos.com podcast. With me again today is our own Andrew Mason. Last week, we set about telling you about what the changes on the defense would be, moving from a 4-3 to a 3-4, how that works with the personnel the Broncos have, who excels, and how that fits in generally. And this time, we thought we'd take you through the offense more. You know, obviously the big chatter is about the zone blocking scheme for the running game. Can you take us through that a little bit?
Well, yeah, the difference between zone blocking and power blocking, the latter of which the Broncos have primarily used the last few years, is zone blocking places more of a emphasis on footwork, technique, quickness rather than pure power. Basically, you're having your offensive linemen attack angles, not so much attacking one-on-one. They're looking to get to a spot, force the defensive lineman opposite him to get away from the spot that where he would be able to fill the gap, and then allow the running back to read the holes and then attack which one looks the best. So oftentimes it's not really an improv type system, but at the same time, it's also a system that requires a great deal of intelligence, both on the offensive lineman's part and the running back's part, because you're reading so much of what the defensive line is doing and making a quick reaction to it. So, you know, that's why when you look at the offensive linemen that have succeeded in zone blocking, they're generally smart, quick, agile guys, emphasis on footwork. You know, you can be a big guy. Like, they drafted Ryan Clady in 2008 back when Mike Shanahan was still the head coach. Rick Dennison was offensive coordinator and working with the offensive line. And they drafted him for zone blocking. Now, he's just talented enough and strong enough to where he was able to make the transition to a power-based scheme and play at an all-pro level. But this is what they picked him for, and I think this is going to suit him very well going forward. And he told me down at the Pro Bowl he's very excited to get back to zone blocking.
Last year, that zone blocking scheme paid off dividends for Kubiak and Dennison and Perriani, too, all within that coaching staff in Baltimore, and also paid dividends for the running back, Justin Forsett. I got a chance to talk to him at the Pro Bowl as well, and he and C.J. Anderson are both very close as Cal Bear guys, so they've already talked to it a little bit at, I don't want to say at length, but Forsett said that he's told CJ that, you know, get ready, you're going to have a lot of fun in this scheme.
Yeah, and the big thing for running backs when you're running behind zone blocking is be decisive. You know, we heard it from Bobby Turner, who was the running backs coach here for 15 years, and Eric Studisville has a similar philosophy: take that one cut and go, and be decisive. You know, maybe you're going to make a mistake every now and again, but make it at full speed. The last thing you want to do in a zone blocking scheme is stand back there and tap dance, because if you do that, then you're going to let your opportunity get to the second level go astray. The holes are going to be there pretty quickly, and you've got to be able to take the ball and attack and be decisive. C.J. Anderson's very good at that. That's something that we saw from him over the course of the second half of the season. I mean, as good as he was, you know, playing at a Pro Bowl level after becoming a starter, I think he can do even better. It may also revive Ronnie Hillman. I think it also may provide a little bit of a boost to Monte Ball coming back off the groin injury that he had last year. Let's not forget about him and where he might fit in this offense and in this running game, because he understands zone blocking, because he grew up following the Broncos very closely, admiring guys like Terrell Davis and Mike Anderson and Alandis Gary and Clinton Portis. So these were the guys that succeeded as one-cut-and-go runners behind the zone blocking scheme. So he understands it, and I think he's going to enjoy it as well. I think basically what we're going to find is the Broncos, if they can solidify their offensive line with the right types of guys, and remember, you've got a question mark at right tackle, you've got Will Montgomery at center and Orlando Franklin at left guard hitting free agency. So, you know, maybe the Broncos will retain those guys, or maybe they're going to go in a different direction. But the offensive line could be changed a little bit, and how well it congeals and comes together, I think, will determine the success or failure of the running backs working behind it.
In addition to that, the tight end is going to play a key role. I was talking to Perriani, I think it was last week, and he said that that is a very key role to kind of set that edge, you know, get those angles going. Obviously, the Broncos have some question marks. Players, all the tight ends are, you know, free agents this year, I believe. So they'll have to make some decisions there, and that'll be a important role to see how that kind of plays out with this running game.
Certainly, and the emphasis on blocking certainly may alter the plans for some. I mean, you look at Julius Thomas, for instance. Obviously, he's a 2-time Pro Bowler, but not the best blocker. And part of that is due to the fact that he just doesn't have the overall football experience, because he didn't play in college until his senior year, and he didn't play most of his high school years. So he's a bit behind in terms of learning blocking technique. And and if the Broncos re-sign him, that's something he's going to have to work on to make himself useful, because you know you've got to be at least a credible blocker, even if you're a fantastic pass catcher. I go back to Shannon Sharp back when he played for the Broncos, and back when they had a zone blocking scheme under Mike Shanahan, the head coach at the time. And you know, I'm not saying that Shannon Sharp was an all world blocker, but he was a capable blocker, and he put effort into working to get better at it throughout his career. And you know, he didn't simply ignore that part of the game, and that's something that every tight end, even if they're a pass catching tight end, even if that's what they do best, is going to have to understand that to earn your bacon in this offense, you're going to have to block.
And one of the guys who might go under the radar a little bit from the backfield standpoint is going to be Juwan Thompson. He had some good runs in this offense last year, and this is an offense that's going to use fullback a bit more. Now, he has that build, that kind of stocky build. He's a very strong runner, strong guy, so he could fit in there. But do you see him needing to pick up more in picking up blitzes, stuff like that?
Well, I thought he came along very well in terms of that aspect of his game. You know, very smart guy, but you know, even if you're smart, you're still having to kind of pick up things when you get into this offense. And you can look back at points in the 2014 season where Peyton Manning would kind of tell him, you know, no, this is who you block here. You got to watch this guy. You know, watch this guy off the edge, or they're gonna come up the A gap. You've got to make sure you pick up that blitz. He, like you say, he's got the kind of build to be a fullback. He probably needs to add 5 or 10 pounds. The other key thing is, if you look at the history of fullbacks in this offense with the Broncos, a majority of them have been converted running backs who added some weight, and they like the fact that, you know, a converted running back thus has the ability to make some plays with the football, the ability to catch passes out of the backfield. And I look at guys like a guy like Howard Griffin that a lot of Broncos fans remember from the 1990s. Well, he was a tremendous running back at the University of Illinois before he came into the NFL and then added some weight and became a fullback. Mike Anderson, who was a 2-time 1,000-yard running back in this offense, was a fullback working in front of Clinton Portis. Cecil Stapp, a very productive runner in college at Colorado State, added some weight and became a fullback here. So it would not surprise me at all if Juwan Thompson ends up being the guy they say, okay, put on a few pounds and let's try you out fullback and see how you do.
With all the focus that's on the Broncos running game, that's on the zone blocking scheme, it kind of gets lost in the traffic that there's also a passing game to think about. You know, Peyton Manning's decision whether or not to come back weighs heavily in that. You know, as well as Demaryius Thomas's contract decision. But how different do you expect things to be within the passing game? Is it going to be much different than what we've seen?
Well, we allude to a little of this with the tight ends, if they're going to be asked to block a little more, and how you have expiring contracts for Julius Thomas, Virgil Green, Jacob Tammy. That's going to shake things up a little bit. I mean, even though Demaryius Thomas, there were some reports in the past several days that Eric Decker was wooing him to try to come to the Jets. I think we all have a pretty good notion that Demaryius Thomas, one way or another, is going to be back in a Broncos uniform this year, either as a franchise player or a guy who gets a long-term contract. And the thing to remember is that, you know, the Broncos, when they franchise tag a guy, you know, that means that that has typically meant that several months later there's a long-term contract there. So I think clearly Demaryius Thomas is still going to be in their plans. But it will be interesting to see what happens elsewhere at receiver. You know, Wes Welker is a free agent. And with all the needs elsewhere on the offense, and frankly, if you're changing the emphasis of the offense, if you're going to use a fullback more often, that would probably mean fewer three wide sets. Maybe, you know, Wes Welker's on his way out, if that's the case. And Emmanuel Sanders is back for the second year of his 3-year deal. And you also have Cody Latimer, who the second round pick last year, didn't get on the field that much, but I think, as we all saw in training camp and in the preseason, showed some flashes of brilliance and clearly is still in the long-term plans. But what I could see happening is that Cody Latimer settles in as a number three receiver, but a number three receiver that when the Broncos go three wide, that he plays outside and Emmanuel Sanders goes inside to the slot to play a spot that he handled very well in three wide sets for the Steelers before coming to Denver. So that's one thing I think that would change, especially if Wes Welker does not return, is seeing Sanders back in the slot just to get your three best guys out there. Because I think, you know, Cody Latimer showed enough to where if he gets more extensive playing time, I think he could take the next step and be an asset. Certainly another big physical target on the outside. And the other thing with Cody Latimer, and why you may even see them work him in two wide receiver sets as a relief for Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders going forward. Cody Latimer is an outstanding blocker. In fact, one of the things that John Elway touched on when they drafted him last year was that they considered Cody Latimer to be the best blocking wide receiver in the 2014 draft class. And that is something that's especially important in what Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison want to do offensively. I look back at the Broncos' offenses of the 1990s and the 2000s. You know, Ed McCaffrey and especially Rod Smith were good to terrific blockers. I mean, you know, Rod Smith was, you know, I could espouse on his attributes for days. You know what he did as an undrafted guy, becoming the franchise's all-time leading receiver over time. But my goodness, as a blocker, that's where he showed his tenacity most of all, and that's part of the reason why he was such a great asset. And so I could see Cody Latimer, who has had some conversations with Rod Smith and has talked to him and has sought him out, I could see him becoming that next great blocking wide receiver for the Broncos and being as much of an asset in the running game as the passing game.
Now, as we saw last year, Emmanuel Sanders was often the other wideout, but putting him in the slot, I mean, he did that some too. He was a very effective, especially on third downs. He and Peyton really connected a lot. They got their rhythm going, you know, from the beginning, but Sanders was an exceptional third down receiver. He was, yes. You know, you could lean on him to get the yardage and come down with that ball. But I think moving him inside is definitely going to make things a little bit easier as far as, no offense to Wes, but Sanders is young. Sanders is spry. Mm-hmm. Sanders can do it all.
And from that slot, he can also go deep. That's the interesting thing, and that's really what we didn't see a lot of from Wes Welker the last couple of years. You know, I mean, he's very, they call him the slot machine for a reason, but at the same time, there was a lot. It was, pretty much all underneath with him. Whereas with Emmanuel Sanders, we've seen him working outside as a deep threat. I think he can channel that going inside of the slot a little more if that's what the Broncos decide to do with him. I think there's some exciting possibilities for this receiving corps. And, you know, like I said, I'm really eager to see Cody Latimer get some more opportunities because, boy, I can go back to OTAs as well last year when he's just making these dazzling acrobatic catches in the back of the end zone. And then I think if you were watching the last preseason game, I know you were, Swanee, but I'm not sure every listener was watching the last preseason game in Dallas and had that big catch and run, showed that also he can, you can even use Cody Latimer as a slot guy from time to time because you can run him from the slot and he can have a quick drag route and, You know, he's got a he can turn a small gain into a very long one, you know, once he gets some space, because, you know, he has that really long stride as well that allows him to pick up a lot of yardage. So I think it's there's some exciting possibilities for the Broncos and their receiving targets this year.
And plus, with that, with the blocking you talk about with Widener, if you put him in the slot, that gives him some more chances if they want
yes.
in those middle ground spots to run the ball on a draw play or something like that.
And maybe that gives you flexibility to not use a tight end, to continue using three wide sets, but. You know, Latimer, you know, being big enough and being physical enough can go inside, and then you can use a three wide set and have a fullback ahead of the running, ahead of whoever the tailback is, and that gives you some more, you know, some more options that you can do formationally.
As far as the transition between two different types of offense, how smooth do you think that goes?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. What nomenclature they use, because the language of Kubiak and his offenses is based in the West Coast scheme, whereas the language the Broncos have used the last several years, going back to 2009 when Mike McCoy first came in as offensive coordinator under Josh McDaniels, it's that language has been more. Yeah, they call it the Patriots. It's, you know, kind of the Patriots scheme, but really that language goes back to, and it does go back to the Patriots of the 1970s. It's the Ron Earhart, Ray Perkins offense, which has a completely different verbiage and completely different way of making the calls at the line. So I'm curious to see whether Gary Kubiak adapts what he wants to do and translates it into that language. Because what happened when Peyton Manning came to Denver in 2012, instead of asking the entire offense to learn kind of the language and the style that Peyton Manning had executed in Indianapolis, basically Mike McCoy, Adam Gase, two of the key assistants on the staff at the time, and Manning endeavored to translate the things that suited Peyton and that type of offense best and translated into the language that the Broncos had been using since 2009. So, you know, it's easier for one or two people to learn a new language than it is for an entire offense. So I'm curious to see in what direction the Broncos go with their their offensive nomenclature.
They certainly don't have any shortage of unfamiliar pieces there. I mean, Greg Knapp has been working with Kubiak and Dennison in Houston. The coaching staff has been working with each other for, you know, you go back over a decade.
And you've got, I mean, really, Eric Studisville's new to a lot of these guys on the staff, but certainly what he espouses as far as, you know, wanting his backs to go, you know, to be decisive, to make that one cut and go, fits very well in with what the Broncos want to accomplish running the football. And then Clancy Barone, you go back to 2010, and he actually replaced Rick Dennison as the offensive line coach. And was on the staff with Dennison back in 2009 when Barone first arrived, and Dennison had stayed on for a year as offensive line coach. So there's already some cohesion among a lot of these new parts on the staff on offense and on defense as well, and I think they're going to be able to hit the ground running as a result.
And then the last piece of the puzzle was, we've hired a defense coordinator, offense coordinator, and now special teams coordinator. Joe DeCamillis will be taking over the special teams, a group that turned a corner when they put Omar Bolden in the to receive kicks, and I guess they also put Wes Welker back in for punt return. But what changes do you want to see, and what changes do you think that they'll implement, both, you know, returning but also coverage?
Well, I think you're gonna go into the off season thinking that Omar Bolden's going to be your kickoff returner. And Isaiah Burst, who ended the season on the practice squad, that, you know, I think he's going to get the first look at punt returner, which he handled for much of the season before being moved to the practice squad, basically to kind of save a roster spot and make room for an extra kicker on the roster when Brandon McManus was brought back as a kickoff specialist, after Connor Barth came in as the place kicker. So you're going to go in with those guys. That being said, the Broncos have some extra draft picks. We're going to find out what they are through this mysterious hazy compensatory draft process. But they're probably going to end up with probably about nine draft picks. So maybe one of those extra picks you use on a return specialist to kind of upgrade that. It will be interesting to see what they do at kicker. Do they go into the season with two kickers again, or do they hope that maybe Brandon McManus finds the accuracy that he was lacking last year and seizes both the kickoff and the place kicking jobs? A lot of questions on special teams, but I think one thing that goes through every facet of special teams, returns, coverage, place kicks, etc., is the need to avoid mental mistakes. So many times we saw, frankly, dumb penalties from the special teams unit. And we saw guys kind of in the wrong lane. We can all remember Julian Edelman's punt return in New England, you know, where you had a bad snap to Britton Colquitt, and you had guys kind of out of position because there was that little bit of a delay in Colquitt getting off the ball because of the snap. So you want guys, you know, to be a bit more disciplined, both in terms of penalties and in terms of the lanes they take, in terms of the paths they take to get in position in coverage. And the other thing, frankly, you need a better performance from Britton Colquitt. He's one of the most expensive punters in the league, and he finished in the bottom 25% in a lot of key metrics for punters. That has to change. He's got to get back to the form that he had a couple of years ago when he earned this big contract. He needs to recapture that form and be a top-end punter and not a bottom-of-the-table punter.
All right, well, thank you, Mace. That'll wrap up our coverage of the Broncos' new coaching changes and what we think we can expect to see in the coming months and as we get back into, past the draft process, get back into OTAs, players returning, what we think we can see in those coming months when the changes that we're talking about are possibly implemented and how that goes on further from now. Next week, we'll be preparing for the draft combine process, which will be coming up February 17th, I believe. So we'll get you kind of briefed on some of the people we think we should be watching for, some of the needs that the Broncos will be having going into what they're looking at, you know, in this draft process. And that'll be coming to you next week. I want to thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week.